The stock market is no place to be if you're in the book-selling business. This week, one listed company vanished from the trading roster, and another saw its share price fall as fast as a dropped copy of War and Peace. Welcome to Copyright Clearance and his podcast series. I'm Christopher Keneally for Beyond the Book. Books a Million's majority owners have bought out all remaining stockholders to take the company private, and Barnes & Noble finds its numbers headed in the wrong direction. Andrew Albanese, Publishers Weekly senior writer, joins me now as he does each Friday with all the Wall Street details. Welcome back, Andrew.
Greetings, Chris.
So here we are heading to publishing's big holiday season. And for the big retailers, it's a sort of do or die, usually, when they talk about this time of year. They're hoping, obviously, that 2015 is going to be a big one for them. The year, though, hasn't been so kind, at least for Barnes & Noble generally, but more recently in this last quarter.
Yeah, that's right. On Friday last week, Barnes & Noble had a call to discuss its second quarter performance, and once again, the news was not good for the chain. Total sales fell 4.5% for the second quarter, which ended on Halloween, October 31st, and the net loss was worse than expected, partly due to severance charges that were associated with the spinoff of the college and education division of Barnes & Noble. Alarmingly, revenue also fell across the board in the retail segment, and that includes both the physical stores and the website, BNN.com. Now, notably, the company reported both lower online sales and less physical sales, and the smaller physical sales was partly due to the fact there were more store closures this year. But all in all, lower online sales and lower physical sales, that's not really a good look for Barnes & Noble. And here's another little nugget that came out of the call, which you can make of what you wish. Lower sales of adult trade and juvenile books were offset for Barnes & Noble by higher sales of adult coloring books, which we've spoken about on this podcast before, and a related surprise, I assume they mean crayons, and sales in the games and toys segment at Barnes & Noble shot up a pretty healthy 14.9%. And anecdotally, I know that's true because whenever my kids and I go into Barnes & Noble, they run right for the toy section. In a conference call discussing the results, BNN CEO Ron Boir put a fair amount of the blame for the weak retail performance on BNN.com, which you may recall suffered some problems at the beginning of the year when unveiled a revamped website. And, you know, we couldn't talk about Barnes & Noble without talking about the Nook division, too. Once again, it's bad news, unfortunately. Results for the Nook were pretty much worse than they were for retail. The revenue for the Nook division dropped a staggering 31.9% in the quarter over last year. Sales of digital content fell 29.8%, and hardware sales dropped by about 30%. So grim numbers indeed. Despite the rough performance, Boir expressed some confidence about the future. Sales in November, which are benefiting from an improved website, are going up, he says. And in what counts for good news these days at Barnes & Noble, they expect only to close 10 stores in fiscal 2016. And that's down from the 13 it had on the hit list originally. So less Barnes & Noble's closing equals good news.
Some kind of good news anyway. And Andrew, you say the report covers sales through October 31st, Halloween. These are definitely numbers that would spook shareholders. So is there any light at the end of this tunnel, or is it just a Frankenstein's monster headed toward them?
Well, as you suggest, and I think as to be expected with such a report, Barnes & Noble stock got hammered last week. It dropped 17% in value to its lowest close in 2 years after the news. So I think investors are a little bit jittery. And you may have seen reports that Ron Boir voiced optimism about the book business in general, which he said on the call was still the soul of the company. He noted that print was bouncing back as ebooks were sort of leveling off. You know, 5 years ago when ebooks were surging, people were wondering what the future of books were. Well, now that's sort of balanced out, and he's expressing confidence in print. But I have to say that statement puzzles me a little bit. You know, I understand that selling print books is still vital to Barnes & Noble, and that's a good thing. But Barnes & Noble really can't compete with Amazon on price. And Barnes & Noble is still closing stores, even if more slowly than in the past. They're still not expanding. They're shrinking a little bit. And of course, Barnes & Noble sells ebooks too. Toys are on the rise. So, but you know, optimism aside, I think it's all in all not a pretty picture for Barnes & Noble.
Well, the college division also disappointed in their numbers. Tell us about that. There's a lot to teach us there as well.
Yeah, so this quarter was actually the first period that Barnes & Noble Education reported standalone results since separating from its parent, Barnes & Noble. And despite opening 7 new stores in the quarter and winning 10 new contracts for more school stores, comp sales decreased 3% during the quarter and overall are down almost 2% for the whole year. Barnes & Noble officials say that the fall rush period this year, the back-to-school period, was negatively impacted by lower student enrollments, especially at community colleges. And where Barnes & Noble had predicted a 1% rise for the education division for the year, it has now revised its prediction for the full fiscal year and expects to be flat or down slightly. So not a great start for the BNN education folks either.
Well, continuing our stock market report here, Andrew, I previewed the news in our intro that Books A Million is about to go private. It's a great way to protect themselves from the vicissitude of the daily exchange, but it may not be a good sign either. Tell us more.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we should be doing this report on CNBC this week or something, right? We're doing it's a big marketplace report, and I'm not sure what the Books A Million news is going to mean, if it's going to mean anything to general consumers. But as you say, shareholders of Books A Million voted overwhelmingly to accept a $3.25 per share offer from the Anderson family to buy back all the shares in the retailer that the Andersons didn't already own. Our listeners may know that the Andersons actually owned about half, I think a little more than half, of the Books A Million stock, and this deal is valued at, they bought the rest of the shares at about $21 million. And that sale is actually expected to be officially completed by today, at which point BAM will stop being a publicly traded company. So I'm not sure exactly what to make of that. You can read into it what you will, but there's one less stock for us to follow on the exchange, at least on the book selling side.
All right. Well, let's get back to books. That's what this report is all about here. And that brings us to libraries, one of your favorite subjects. And at the end of just last week, Penguin Random House announced it was going to unify the terms of sale for libraries. This has a really important impact moving forward for libraries and for librarians who received the news rather, well, sort of with mixed emotions.
Yes. Yeah, so ever since the merger between Random House and Penguin was announced, librarians have been sort of left to wonder which terms of sale for library ebooks was ultimately going to win out. And that's because Penguin offered library ebooks on a different model than Random House did. Penguin offered libraries cheaper but limited licensing terms, while Random House offered more expensive but perpetual access terms for their ebooks. Well, now we know what it's going to be. Going forward, it's going to be the Random House model. Last week, Penguin Random House executives announced that all Penguin ebooks purchased after January 1st, 2016 are going to be licensed on the same model as Random House, the perpetual access model. So that means unlimited number of lens, unlike other models where you have to relicense the book after a year or after a certain number of lens. 26 lens is usually a pretty popular number. So specifically, Penguin titles were available to libraries roughly at consumer prices. So you could buy an ebook for your library for about the same price as the book was selling to a consumer, but you had to relicense it every year. Random House titles, on the other hand, never have to be relicensed, but they cost about $85 a title at the high end. That's about 3 to 4 times the consumer price. So in a bit of good news on that subject, Random House did announce that it was dropping the top prices of its library ebooks by $20. So the $85 Random House ebooks are now going to be $65. But as you say, librarians are still not too happy about the move.
Right. And, you know, you have to wonder why, because perpetual access, it sounds like a good thing. What's the problem with it?
Well, you know, it sounds like a good thing, and in some cases it absolutely is. But, you know, a few observations on this. And the first is to say that there's no such thing as perpetual access in the digital world. Random House likes to say that you can access digital forever, whereas a print book will eventually wear out and you'll have to rebuy it. But I have to say, and the librarians will back me up on this, that's pretty much pure fantasy. Digital requires constant upgrades. And even if the license terms allow you to access it forever, your devices and your hardware do not. And if you look at like the first ebook readers that came out just 5 or 7 years ago, compared to what's available on the market today, you can barely read. In fact, you can't read a number of the books that are available today on the old e-readers. So in order to make good on the perpetual license or license forever model, a reader or a library is going to constantly have to reinvest and spend more money on technology to to access that file. But what really bothers the librarians is that these high prices on the front end, these $85, $65 prices, restrict libraries' ability to meet current demand. And the fact is, librarians don't want perpetual access to bestsellers. They want peak access. In other words, when the demand is really high for a book like 50 Shades of Grey, they want to be able to serve all the digital readers they can. And at $85 a pop, they can't do that. And by spending $85 a pop on a digital book, that's less money that they have to spend on print copies to circulate. And fact is, they don't want 500 digital editions of 50 Shades of Grey living in their cloud forever. Remember, librarians weed their collections from time to time. You know, just like a librarian today would look pretty silly with 500 copies of Who Moved My Cheese on their shelves, you know, even though that was a number one bestseller for a number of years, where most of those copies are now gone, they just keep a couple to put on the shelves. So I think Random House missed an opportunity here to give librarians what they really wanted, which is sort of a hybrid model. They want to be able to buy perpetual access copies for their permanent collections, but they also want to be able to spend money to meet the immediate demand. You know, rather than having perpetual access licenses, I think they'd like to see two-week licenses or things of that nature. So, you know, it's not hard to see why Random House would choose perpetual access, though. They just got to triple their prices on library ebooks for Penguin Books. You know, and maybe in the future, after this model sort of levels off, after they've gotten everything they can out of this price increase, they will come back and offer a hybrid. They certainly have a model in place to try that. But for now, they're cashing in on the Penguin side, I think. You know, I'll be at ALA in Boston January 8th to 12th, and I'll be speaking on a panel on this very subject on ebooks and what's next. And we're probably going to talk a little bit more about Random House and what librarians are thinking about ebooks in 2016 on the coming weeks on this show. But this move by Random House is really going to have big implications for libraries in 2016. And I think it could, you know, maybe hurt digital reading overall, because it's certainly going to make it harder for some libraries to stock Penguin Random House titles. And Penguin Random House titles routinely account for 50% of the bestseller lists. So we'll see what this means going forward. But so far, the librarians I've talked to tell me they're not terribly pleased with this development. And I think you, as you fairly say, it's been a mixed reaction at best.
All right. Yeah, well, listen, you know, that image you gave us of 500 digital editions of 50 Shades of Grey up there in the clouds. That gets pretty steamy, I'm sure, very fast.
At $85 a copy, no less.
And expensive, exactly. Andrew Albany, senior writer for Publishers Weekly, thanks so much for joining us, as you do every Friday on Beyond the Book.
My pleasure, as always.
Beyond the Book is produced by Copyright Clearance Center, a global rights broker for the world's most sought-after materials, including millions of books and ebooks, journals, newspapers, magazines, and blogs, as well as images, movies, and television shows. You can follow Beyond the Book on Twitter, find us on Facebook, and subscribe to the free podcast series on iTunes or at our website, beyondthebook.com. Our engineer and co-producer is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. My name is Christopher Keneally. For all of us at Copyright Clearance Center, thanks for listening to Beyond the Book.